Tune in to The Divine Frequency. Chip and Lisa St. Clair help you turn your passion into purpose. This is The Divine Frequency on Empower Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Chip and Lisa St. Clair.
Hello, and welcome to The Divine Frequency and part two of our episode, Getting Your Marriage to Resonate at the Divine Frequency. This is Chip St. Clair, and I'm here with my wife, my best friend always, Lisa.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back.
And for the next half hour, we're going to guide and inspire you to tune out the static, tune out the drama of life, and tune back into that frequency at which you were meant to resonate, the divine frequency. If you're just tuning in for the first time, I encourage you to check out the first part of this episode, which is archived on empower.com and is also available on iTunes and iHeart, among other sites. This is a show about getting past the past, getting out of your own way, and getting back onto the road to a life of meaning, of purpose, of success. So today, once again, let's quiet our minds. Let's adjust that dial and tune out the static. Close our eyes and visualize the meadow where we left off last week. The skies are still clear and blue, except for a couple of clouds still bumbling along lazily. You know, the more I look at that one, Lisa, I really see a buffalo in it. Or is that a bison?
I think it's turned into a buffalo.
Lisa and I are just lounging here on a large blanket, and our producer, Dylan, wow, how about giving Dylan some major props? I mean, he's kept that kite up for a week now. While we've been waiting for you to come back, that's got to be some kind of record. So before we deep dive into part two, let's take a moment to remember where we left off. We had established that communication is the key to our relationships with others, right? Gestures, body language, our words, our looks, emails, texts, social media, with so many ways to express how we feel, you'd think we'd all be getting along swimmingly, right? Especially with those we are closest to, those interpersonal relationships that we choose to be in. And as I said on the last show, the APA shows that the current divorce rates are around 50%. I've heard statistics that are even higher. Over half of all marriages end in divorce. And for those on their second or third marriage, the stats of failure are even worse. Now, our regular listeners know Lisa and I are embedded in the successful marriage camp on the other 50%. We've been together since high school, 23 years, married for 16, on Valentine's Day, 1999. And in all of our travels and lectures, we're asked again and again, How have we managed to navigate all the static of my troubled childhood to have a happy, loving marriage based on mutual respect and strong communication? I mean, there are literally times that people stop us randomly in stores. Remember that, Lisa? Shopping? We could be at a grocery store, at a restaurant.
I know.
And they ask us, are you guys newlyweds? We're like,
actually,
sort of. It's been 23 years of a honeymoon. But how do you maintain that level of companionship? How do you have that? How do you get that? Well, our regular listeners also know that to get to this point, it was a lot of work. It wasn't a cakewalk, especially with my family background. And I had no idea what love really was or what a healthy marriage looked like. Remember my family dynamics? My father was a chauvinist. My mother was passive-aggressive and would stick her tongue out at him behind his back instead of trying to talk things out. She was an alcoholic and would drink to get away from the problems in the marriage and other things. My father would communicate with violence and with disrespect. He'd make fun of my mother. He'd beat her. And then he would turn around and watch sleazy movies. My mother would cry. He would shut her down. It was sad, really. And then we have Lisa's family dynamics.
Yeah, I saw the complete opposite. And I grew up in a very loving family. I had the idea that men and women were equal. And we may have had different roles that we played, but we could do whatever we dreamed if we put our minds to it. So, and you know, I had a brother and a sister, so we all shared responsibilities, the same chores. But there was no separation of what my brother had to do or what I had to do. And mom, dad, I could have gone in the kitchen and seen my dad cooking or my mom cooking. Nothing was shocking to me. So I saw respect between the two of them and love and a lot of communication. They argued this is not, it's not like it was a perfect relationship. There was healthy arguing. And I think I said before, I could find them in the bedroom with the door shut and they would be talking out whatever they needed to work out in their communication, not involving us in it for the most part. So we were just asked when we'd open the door up and, you know, it was getting to be a long time and they'd say, we're not done yet. We'll come out and we're done. So, alcohol was always used as a special occasion. It would be very rare that I saw my parents ever have a glass of any alcohol in their hand. So, really, and like I said, swearing and profanity and nudity and all of that. My parents shielded us from all of that stuff through our elementary school years. And really it was startling to ever hear them swear. It so much so that I could count on my hands how much that happened throughout my youth. So I really it was such an eye opener. Actually, even coming over to your house and when your dad would be joking, whether your dad or mom would be joking, I'd hear them swear, and it was just I almost felt like I was watching a movie. I felt like it was just strange.
Yeah, if anybody's read my memoir, The Butterfly Garden, you'll see my father used profanity as punctuation. It was pretty sad. And having grown up the way I did, it just stands to reason. I had a short temper. I was easily annoyed. I shut my emotions down, and if you expressed your emotions, and I regret it. I shut you down. My walls were up. I would meet an argument or a disagreement with with sarcasm and with mocking you.
Yeah. And I didn't know how to deal with things like that, because in my home I was taught that if something was bothering me, we would talk about it. We'd discuss it rationally. And each person, the goal was to try and solve a problem, to work toward a more happy means of communicating. And so I didn't know how to deal with irrationality, and I was very reactive, and it took me by surprise sometimes. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Things would be, you'd be happy, or maybe there'd just be something that it'd be like, you know, why did you do that, Chip? And the defensiveness coming out, and then it was almost my way of giving you a taste of your own medicine in an effort to try and shock you enough to see that if that hurt you, obviously it hurt me, so maybe you'd stop. And so things that I'd say, like, you know, well, seeing how you're emotionless and things don't ever seem to bother you, I don't even know why I'm trying to talk to you, because you probably don't care anyway. And the things statements like that are...
Well, that would fire me up, yeah.
They're definitely not productive, and they actually end up either, you know, they'd silence you or...
Right.
Or,
if you would be upset about something I said or did that I thought was... I didn't think it was a big deal if, I don't know, I didn't record a certain show you wanted to watch, or if I... you know, overlooked something you wanted, bought at the grocery store. It could be something simple, but if you got upset about it, you know, I go, oh, boo, hoo, hoo, and you know, that kind of stuff. And that's just, that's so hurtful. And like so many marriages and intimate relationships, it wasn't any one great thing that was creating the static and threatening to destroy our life together. It was a compilation of many things, all the little things that when you add them up, they prove to be too much.
Well, nothing like that is ever enough to make somebody want to leave the other person. But it is something, like you said, it adds up. And when we swallow too many of those things, we're sending a message to our partner that's okay. And it's only going to get worse.
So poor behavior becomes a habit.
Sure.
You know, just like anything else. And you get used to talking and dealing with each other with sarcasm, with walking out of the room, with rolling your eyes, with talking to your friends instead of your significant other about things. So as the saying goes, a marriage can die by 1,000 cuts. But what is the solution? What did we uncover about our relationship and ourselves that brought us closer to the divine frequency? We found out that for any marriage to succeed, it needs what we call core values. Now that's core, C-O-R-E. And each letter stands for something. C, communication. O, openness. R, respect. And E, equality. Core values. We talked already in some detail about communication, about the first one. How do we deliver what we're saying is just as important as what we are saying. Rolling your eyes, sighing, mocking, sarcasm, none of it's productive. All of it is antagonizing and creates static.
And see, I just can't stress enough that if you can keep the core values in your marriage always in the forefront of your mind, you are sure to have a much more productive and caring relationship.
Well, then you have some ground rules. If you always keep those things in mind, communication, openness, respect, and equality, if those driving principles guide you
in everything, through pain, through confusion, through anger, through anything.
Then everything you do in your relationship falls back to that. Am I communicating well? Am I open enough? Am I being respectful? Am I being treated as an equal? Am I treating my partner as an equal?
Yeah, yeah.
What Lisa and I had decided to do when we were too frustrated to discuss something calmly was call a timeout. Remember that? We'd separate for a while, and you'd go into one room, and I'd go into another.
Well, yeah, because we were arguing about one thing, and then that turned into another thing, and then another thing, and before we knew it, we're arguing about the fourth or fifth thing that was all based off of reaction, and we're no further to solving the first problem.
Yeah, and for me, I didn't really care to argue about any of it, and all of a sudden, you had a cue lined up with the five things that happened since the argument
started. I'd say,
started.
Oh, okay, so now we started this, all right, and I remember the first, the second, the third, and okay,
in order, and it was pretty impressive, actually, but
yeah.
But what we decided to do was when we would separate, we would write how we felt.
Yeah.
You know, two things magically happen, we found out, when you write your feelings. Number one, you give yourself time to calm down. You can think and express clearly without being interrupted and get out all you want to say. I mean, that's one of the really important things in any communication is feeling like you've been heard. And the other thing that occurs is now you've put everything in writing. I mean, I know we're we're not attorneys and nobody's going to notarize what we've just said, what we've put down when we went into our separate rooms. But all of a sudden, there's a certain sense of accountability for your words. So you best be wary of what you write, because it can be pointed out or used against you, or, and it makes you think a little clearer to make sure you're representing the core values of your marriage.
Yeah, when you practice that, because that really was a turning point for us, I think, sticking to that. And it wasn't always difficult, because you don't feel like you want to solve it quickly, and you're at that point. But when you really know that thing, your heart rate is up, your frustration is at an all-time high, when you know you're at that point, it really is the best to stick to that and say, all right, I gotta get away. I gotta sit and write down what I gotta say. And once we got into that habit, into that ritual, then, I mean, we don't really need to do that anymore. And what it does is it shapes your way of thinking of, okay, because when you're writing, you want to put something down. You really want to put that swear word down, or you really want to get that attack in there. Mm-hmm. But then you think, all right, how is this furthering our ability to understand one another and to come to peace about this? So yeah, that was critical in helping us to get to where we are.
Yeah, it's just such a great tool early on, or with those things that are really, really emotional that you need to deal with properly. And it also it prevents potential confusion or a misinterpretation of words. And
right.
Well, now if we go back to our core values, let's take the last one. A little out of order here, equality. Now, over the years, we've discovered some fundamental differences in how men and women are raised. And I don't mean in our individual homes this time, I mean in society. We've literally met thousands and thousands of people as we travel, and have as many notes and letters and emails over the years, and we began to notice a pattern. Despite our culture's claim of equality for the sexes, there are subtle hints that we are actually quite far from recognizing men and women as equal. Lisa, you know, talk a little bit about what toys you played with and the roles you were taught for women and men as a child. Mm.
Okay, well, Barbie and Ken.
Mm-hmm.
I had my dollies. Snuggle Bum was this little plastic toy with like the
you showed me a picture of that recently.
I finally found a picture of that.
If anyone can look that up, Snuggle Bum, it's the cutest thing in the world.
With B-U-M-M, yeah. Snuggle Bum, one word. Yeah. My favorite toy of all time. My Little Pony. Cinderella, you know. Lisa's Laundry. I actually had a Lisa's Laundry.
Wow.
It was a little laundromat. I'd wash my little doll's clothes. And
all the toy collectors going crazy.
I learned you couldn't.
Nostalgia.
You couldn't mix colors with whites in the clothes. It was really a sad moment. I ruined one of my shirts that I liked, one of the doll's shirts.
Oh, wow.
But it actually had a rainbow on it, so it was kind of cool. But
Barbie was mad.
Yeah. But, you know, family-oriented toys and baking, had a little baking set, things like that.
Yeah, and for me, well, G.I. Joe, Star Wars, everything with a hero motif, you know, Thundercats and Rambo. And, you know, it's funny because in G.I. Joe, at least when I was growing up, there's only one female character. You had all these really cool male characters, and there's Scarlet. She's the only female. And usually she was a secondary character. I mean, think about the Smurfs. You know, there's 99 male Smurfs and then Smurfette. I mean, yeah. It must be lonely being the only female. But knowing boys played with these toys, you know, it's like I watch my mom cook and clean, wait on my father hand and foot. And in my experiences in toys, women were either objects to be rescued or accomplishments, or they were, unfortunately, sexualized.
Yeah, I remember talking with you one day a long time ago about Prince Charming and how life was supposed to be. It's what we were raised with, you know, as girls, and looking forward to that family unit. And it was actually in that conversation I realized that there was a disconnect. Mm. And you didn't grow up. Who was your Princess Charming? Who was the girl you were looking to
Yeah, we were fighting the dragon, not necessarily looking for Princess Charming. That that just, you know, that was just one of the, I guess, things that came along with the task. And, you know, these ideals aren't unique to our families. I mean, Lisa and I are talking about our personal lives, but girls are raised focused on self-image and family. And boys in our society are raised to focus on sports and cars and military toys and games and being a hero and all those things. And, you know, is it doomed that never the twain shall meet? I mean, if anything, our girls are being raised a little more well-rounded than boys with sure. sports and such. And but where do young boys ever explore toys or games celebrating fidelity and the family? I challenge our listeners, walk down an aisle in your local toy store, an aisle geared toward boys, and study what you find. And again, this is beyond the scope of how we are raised. We're talking about the messages our children are getting in society, in movies and on television at the toy store.
I remember when you wrote this poem for me, when you finally we finally began to speak the same language, I think, and I remember that poem that you wrote. That showed
birthright. Maybe we'll read that on one of our upcoming episodes.
We'll do that. That was it. Really meant a lot to me because it showed me that the way I needed to look at things and through your eyes. And
well, one of the things that was kind of interesting that you had brought up to me about how your mom and dad always tried to raise your brother and sister and you to feel equal, and you guys would be playing, all of you would with Barbie. And Ken, and what would your brother do?
Well, yeah, my sister might have been busy at that moment, and so I'd be playing with Ryan, and you know, come on, Ryan, play Barbie and Ken with me. Well, Ken could never just be that father. He had to all of a sudden jump into a phone booth, and he was turning into Superman and flying away, and that was just not what I pictured.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, for the ladies out there, you know, you need to be cognizant of being patient with guys. The guys in your lives, when it comes to their skills and experience in family life, they aren't trying to be difficult when they don't seem as engaged as you in participating in the family. They, you know, see it as a skill they have yet to learn, and help teach and educate them. We aren't going to get anywhere by attacking them. Well, let's quickly move on to the O in our core values model here, openness. And, you know, think about this. We come into this world as a baby, with one major form of communication. And in fact, our first form, crying. Babies cry when they're hungry, when they're tired, when they're uncomfortable, when they're lonely. Not just female babies, all babies. And then something strange happens. This natural form of communication is tweaked and guided. And then for young girls, it remains an acceptable outlet to express emotional and physical pain. But for boys, what happens? The crying stops. If it isn't discouraged at home, it sure is at school. Or in other aspects of society. So where does all that negative energy go for boys? How do they mitigate their pain in a healthy way, or do they? They build walls. They build frustration. They learn not to express what they feel inside, or if they do express it, it comes out in anger, or yelling perhaps, slamming things around, or even in violence. Or maybe more subtly, in escapism. For any marriage to succeed, both people need to be able to express their feelings openly and honestly.
Yeah.
One of the phrases that really bothers me also is when a husband refers, or a woman refers to her husband as being one of the children. I mean, I get the frustration, but remember back to our discussion on equality. Is labeling him as a child making your marriage any stronger? Is complaining about your husband or wife behind their back to your friends getting you any closer to the divine frequency? You have to respect one another. You have to protect one another. I mean, you've made a vow to live the rest of your life with this person. Elevate them. Don't belittle them. Lock your doors at night with this person on the inside. You sleep in the same bed as this person. Doesn't it make sense to give them at least the same respect you'd give a friend? Bottom line, make your spouse your best friend. Well, we're running low on time for now, but we promise to revisit our core values in future shows. And notice I didn't mention the word love once, because love comes naturally when all other principles are in place. We want to thank you for tuning in to this double episode of The Divine Frequency, Part 2.
And we're proud to say that The Divine Frequency is made possible by our advocate. Have you or someone you know been injured, such as a car accident or slip and fall? That's when you need legal help. Call 586-997-HELP. These are compassionate and yet smart injury lawyers who think the way you do. They call it injury law healing. That's 586-997-HELP. There is no fee unless you win.
Remember, marriage is the ultimate friendship. We want to thank Empower Radio as we wrap up our picnic here. Also a shout out to our producer, Dylan Lavelle, who has reeled in the kite and winding up the string. Beautiful job out there, Dylan. You can listen to archived episodes of The Divine Frequency on EmpowerRadio.com. And for more information on our work here with the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, visit scbf.org. Or to check out what I've been up to, visit chipstclair.com. Hope you have a divine holiday. Take your life back. Not as it could be, but as it should be. Keep tuning in to The Divine Frequency.